Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. You know what, I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do, do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Follow the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Ooh.
Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to dream all alone.
Great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing. But so I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did. And I had a couple of drinks, and the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks. And once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy, and everyone else is happy, and you're the only one who is feeling lonely, or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it, and the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good, and maybe it is for you. Maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind, life is a bore, and life is difficult, and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It's not. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, we gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. And you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that that, you know, is the way to go. You know, there are. What I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right. Know how to control yourself. Know where to get your pleasure. Know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens. Or else, what are you going to do? What, are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver in order to hypnotize you like Obama and Hillary and Edwards. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, but you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama or Hillary Clinton. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio. Because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there are people who are younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking
about. He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. This just came out on Judge. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse High Jackson. He's a Democrat. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-919-855. MichaelStavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be hard, that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know, you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in ding-dong school the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby. I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on the on tribal lore. I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host to imagine doing his own daughter and son and his son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest a Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel? Oh, he doesn't know, he doesn't feel like you want him to feel? You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces, and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? Now you understand where we're at? When we have Marines who actually are trained to hunt and kill and go out and hunt and kill like they've been trained to do as kids, and that's why they're tough enough to go into the U.S. Marines, and they do the job they were trained to do. What happens? Some puke wearing a uniform who's really a lawyer who's too stupid to get a job in civilian life goes after the kid who does his job. That's why I'm concerned about my country. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to otherwise I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of suite do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the... Oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it for her, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Transgenders, it's Friday. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's Wharf. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You can push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships from World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pompanito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them blowtorch open the hatches to get him in and out.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
WOR, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Where do you stand on the evolution question?
I believe that the nexus of science and theology is actually biblical and can be found in the actual words of the original Hebrew in the Bible. The very first word of the Bible, Bereshis in Hebrew, translated, actually mistranslated as in the beginning, is a testament to your position on God's having created other existence prior to the existence related in Genesis. God says, Bereshis, it is buh. Buh is the indefinite article, not the definite article, the. It is in a beginning. It is the construct form grammatically.
Hold on, stop right there. Stop. You are a biblical scholar, I take it, Jeff. You read the original Hebrew?
Yes, I do.
So I assume you've had an education beyond high school?
In several disciplines.
So in the original Hebrew, the Bible says not in the beginning, but in a beginning?
In a beginning of God creating heaven and earth. The word created, and again, the appropriate exegesis of the language is a...
Hold on. Someone may not understand that word. You're not actually using the name of the Christian God. You said exegesis. You didn't say Jesus, correct?
No, I did not say Jesus. I said exegesis as an interpreter.
Okay. Well, that's a big word for many of my listeners, particularly those who don't believe in evolution.
Well, I guess if one's intelligence is correspondent with one's intellectual acumen and education, then such language is a function of ordinary conversation, isn't it?
So, Jeff, you are a biblical scholar, and where do you come out on evolution and God?
I believe that God created humankind with the dynamic of evolution, with the ability to adapt to circumstances, situations, and to live with a sense of dynamic. God ordained us, God mandated us to subdue the universe. That is a declaration of learning science, becoming knowledgeable. The first element of creation is in a beginning. It's beginning. It's time. God first creates time. Then God creates, and creates, by the way, in Latin, refers to creatio ex nihilo, to create something out of nothing. And God creates heaven, transcendental space, and earth, physical space. Time, space, continuum.
So why, let me ask you a political question on this subject. Why is there a certain tendency now in certain quarters of America to reject evolution? Where is this coming from?
I believe that it threatens the intellectual ability to interpret and understand that there's a certain level of culpability that humankind has for its own actions.
So in other words, they want to create everything is God's will. We have no free will. We're going back to where we're just automatons, where it's all preordained. Not only was man created out of whole cloth, but one's life is preordained as well. Does that go hand in hand with the people who are anti-evolution?
That is correct. There's a definite sense, almost of a predetermined, predisposed circumstance under which we relieve ourselves of liability and culpability for our own actions. I'm sorry.
So in other words, the very same retrograde tendencies that we see in radical Islam, where there is no free will, is now occurring in certain quarters in America? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. And I believe very much that to be the case. I believe that if you examine the nature of religious history and the evolution of religion, Islam itself is the result of evolution of religion. Muhammad took all of the religions available to him at the time. He took Christianity and made Jesus a prophet. He took Judaism and made Abraham and Moses prophets so that Islam would attract the Christians and the Jews. It was, in his mind, the ultimate evolutionary position of religious doctrine.
So we're having this seminar now on the Savage Nation, Jeff. Bible says God created the heaven and the earth, and he did so in 7 days. It does not say he experimented and created first the Neanderthal, etc. So now how do you answer those doubts and fears in a person?
The Bible indicates that God is proactive and responsive. I'm going to identify a narrative that takes place in the time of Moses. The children of Israel are with Moses in the desert, and God has given them the laws of inheritance. And the laws of inheritance are directed toward the sons of the fathers. And one of the families, the father's name is Telephod, he has only daughters. And the daughters come to Moses, and they complain to Moses that they have been now excluded by virtue of their gender. Moses said, you know, that's a really great point. Let me check it out. He picks up the red phone. He calls God. He says, God, listen, we have a problem. These daughters of Telephod are complaining about the laws of inheritance. What do I do? God says to Moses, you know what? They've got a valid position. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to change this and do this, and we're going to give them the right to inherit within these parameters. This is a God that is proactive. A God that is involved, is concerned, a God who adjusts. Now, it is our belief paradigm that God is omnipotent, God is all-powerful, God is omniscient, God knows everything, and that God is perfect. Well, if God is perfect, how can God make a mistake? And the answer is God does not make mistakes. The mistake is our misunderstanding and misinterpretation of that which God does. And absent a cumulative knowledge of the ancients, of the language, of the culture, the philosophy, and the theosophy, as well as the theology, far be it from any of us to assume that we have even the slightest inkling of what it is that God is doing. I had a bris the other day, and I was asked...
Explain what that means to the audience. That's a ritual circumcision.
Ritual circumcision, right? I'm sorry. And I was asked by several people there, what is it, Rabbi, what is it that God wants of us? What does God want? And I thought for a moment, and I said, you know, I have been studying God's words my entire life. And I cherish God's words, and I cherish God's poetry, and I cherish the beauty and the meaning of God's words. And I figured it out. I know what it is that God wants of us. May I share it with you?
Please.
God wants us to care about each other. Sounds very simple.
You know, I got to stop. I've got to stop right here because I happen to think your call was sent by God. I'm not saying that you're a mystical creature. I know you're real somewhere in New York. But when I woke up this morning, I was perplexed as to what I wanted to talk about today. And I couldn't form a real show. The news is boring, fundamentally. It's not that interesting. So I was reverting to my comedic self, which always works, because I can be a funny guy when I want to be, and I'm in the right mood. And the people enjoy it. They need a break, too. But, you know, the words that kept going through my mind from the morning shower onward all day long that I couldn't get out of my mind, Jeff, the words were man's inhumanity to man, man's inhumanity to man. This theme of man's inhumanity to man is what's playing out on television day and night. The world is descending into barbarism and into madness all over again. What we thought we left behind in the last century is coming back to haunt us, perhaps. I fear it'll be worse than the last century. In the last century, as you know, over 100 million people were slaughtered because of the false belief system called Marxism or communism. 100 million people were killed because of the false god of communism. God knows how many people are going to be killed in this century because of a religious conflict being instigated and fomented by psychotic imams around the planet. What is going to save us? If you are such a believer in God, do you think light will prevail? Do you think life will prevail? Or do you think that these throwbacks will drag the world back 1,000 years into darkness?
No, I think that one has to be optimistic. And one has to understand that optimism tempered with the realism of our very, very uncivilized civilization. We have lost our sense of civility, but we have not as yet fallen into the abyss of which you speak. I think we are certainly losing ground rather quickly. But
how much worse does it get than Columbia University, under the guise of diversity, teaching these abominations to the children? Masochism, sadism, whipping people on the stage, and the so-called enlightened liberals like Bollinger, the president, say nothing about this. This is a once great university. Is this not a symbol of the decline and fall of the West?
I think that it's certainly a shout out, to use the vernacular of the day, and a very coarse and abrupt reminder that we've got to reassess and reevaluate our moral compass and get back online here. We've got to learn that our future as a human race, our future as a civilization, is very much a function of our ability to reintegrate a sense of decency and kindness and culture that is rooted in understanding the divinity that is manifest in every human being.
Because yes. Every human being to me, I let flies out of a screen, for example. It's not because I know the fly. It's because I understand the DNA in that fly. I understand the complexity of the fly. I've seen the fly under a microscope. I've looked at a fly's eye under a microscope as a child. I understand a fly's wing, what a miraculous creation a fly is. And so, therefore, if the fly doesn't bother me, why not let it out of the room? To me, it's a way of making a prayer to God himself when I let a fly out of a room. I don't know if anyone could understand that. Maybe they think I'm, you know, crazy by saying a thing like that. But I don't need to kill a fly, in other words, just for the sake of killing a fly. If I'm walking and I see ants, must I crush the ant? Or if I have the choice, can I step over the ant? Why do I step over the ant? Does the ant bother me? Who put the ant on the planet? What is the ant doing, after all? The ant is doing his own business, minding his own business. So I tread lightly on the earth. But I will tell you that I see people who have no regard for human life, no regard for humanity. They would wash this earth in blood in the name of their false god. And I wonder if we in the West have not become too delicate for this battle. This is a religious time in America, as you know. The Christian world, although it seems to be about shopping, it's also about worshiping the Lord Jesus Christ for the Christian people. A benevolent religion, the greatest religion the world has ever seen in its modern form in terms of civility. I think you would have to agree with that. There's no other religion on earth that permits every other religion to function within it with such benevolence, in my opinion. I have a question for you to think about, because you're the man I want the answer to, and just bear with me. The radical Muslim says that the West is corrupt and degenerate and sexually obsessed, and therefore we must all be butchered. And he wants to bring back the word of God. So he does so how? By insulting God, by slaughtering people and torturing them and cutting their heads off. Could God actually want people who are immoral to be killed in order to purify the world? And if that is so, what is more immoral? Sexual excess or murdering and slaughtering an innocent?
Three things very quickly to answer your question. Number one, the transgression of Sodom and Gomorrah was a function of man's inhumanity to man, and Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed.
Wait a minute. So in other words, when a man behaves in such a manner, or a woman behaves in such a manner as described, they are committing inhumanity to themselves and to other men.
That is correct.
These are inhuman acts.
These are inhuman acts, and these are acts that are a function of a lack of respect for the divinity that is manifest in each and every one of us.
So when we hear that such activity is diversity and that we should all open ourselves up to it, we're hearing is the word of the lie, the word of the devil.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Sacramento, Rich, you're on the Savage Nation topic. Please, what's bugging you?
Dr. Michael Savage.
Yes. How are you? What's on your mind?
When I was 15, my grandparents took me to Hawaii, and we weren't fortunate enough to sit first class on the plane. And this elderly lady went to the bathrooms. We're about five rows up, and She apparently emptied out her colostomy bag, and, oh, my God, the smell.
Wait. Well, let's slow down. She emptied it out where, in the sink?
No, in the bathroom, in the toilet in the bathroom. But
Hold. Let's not get too graphic. So the plane was experiencing a little roughage?
The smell for about 3 hours.
Oh, my God. So you were sitting in first class but next to the restroom?
No, not in first class. We were back in the middle of the, back near the back of the plane, but I'm just saying we were about five rows up from the bathrooms. And
you could still smell the stink there?
Are you kidding me? It filled the whole plane. It was
horrible. You see, I think you're being illiberal about this. The poor woman was suffering. And if you were a Mother Teresa type, you would have offered to rinse a colostomy bag for her.
Michael, you know what I love? I love when you do your nostalgia about your youth. It brings me back to my Italian upbringing. Sometime I would love to tell you about my grandfather.
Rich, where'd you grow up? What city?
Oh, I grew up in down by Glendora, but my grandparents came from New York. My grandfather was my great-grandfather's chauffeur, and he had seven daughters, and he was family, in the family. And
Wait a minute. Your great-grandfather was your grandfather's chauffeur?
And my grandpa was his chauffeur, and he fell in love with my grandma Dolly, and my great grandpa threatened to kill him, but my grandfather was so in love with her, he told my grandpa, "I love Dolly, I'm going to marry her someday." And I swear, and he went ahead and he opened up a little market in New York. And when the grandpa died, there was no sons to carry on the business, and just like in the movies, they were threatened, and that's when they moved to Glendora, California, Michael.
Oh my God, you really are the American, like the American novel.
When you talk about, one-armed in New York and stuff, it brings back those memories. When they moved to Glendora, my aunt Sally wanted a new car, and the guy wouldn't throw in a radio, and my grandmother my grandpa's name, and what do you know? They threw in the radio. I mean, I could tell you.
He mentioned the grandfather's name, and the guy gave the car for free.
Yeah, when you mention this stuff, Michael, I love it. It brings it back, man.
He said, madam, do me a favor. Take the dealership.
Oh, Michael, I love it.
So, Rich, you yourself today are legitimate, though, I hope.
Oh, I swear. Oh, yeah.
I don't care. It's your business. It's your business, and I don't want to know anything about it. But, Rich, do you ever go back to the old country, meaning New York City?
I've never been there. I've always wanted to.
It's overrated, Rich. It's overrated. You know, it really is. You know, you could find what you're looking for virtually anywhere except in Glendora. I don't know. Is there an Italian community in Glendora?
Oh, yeah. We used to go to this little deli called Claro's. They used to make their own homemade Italian sausage there. Michael, I'm adopted. I'm not even pure. I'm not even born Italian, but my grandparents raised me that way.
And that's Italian beautiful. Well, you sure have a love for your family, huh?
And then my grandparents would get mad at each other and start cussing in Italian. I miss it, Michael. I miss it.
Hold on. Let me ask you something. This is interesting. Before we go, they obviously lived a long life together, right? How many years were they married?
Well, they were married since they were 15 and 14.
No, but are they still living?
Huh? No. They both died.
All right. So how many years were they married before someone died?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. 70 years.
70 years. And did they have a volatile relationship, meaning verbally they yelled at each other?
Near the end, yes, especially my grandfather. We had a cabin in Big Bear down Southern California.
See, I'm getting at something. Rich, that's the way people generally related to each other in another generation. They didn't talk quiet, and God forbid you should raise your voice and they call a psychiatrist. They yelled at each other. I think that those who yell at each other stay together.
We loved each other, Michael, but we would scream every holiday. I married a German woman.
What do you mean, only on the holidays? What was wrong with your family that you waited for a holiday to yell at each other?
I married a German woman. I go to the house, we open the presents, the mother's over there knitting, and the father is reading a book, and I'm like, where's the yelling?
What is wrong with them? Why are they so quiet? Why are they ignoring us? It's a cultural thing. It really is.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. I'm sitting here in my radio studio. I have the Bible that I've used for years. Some of you have seen it in my few live performances, very rare. I've held this book up, the Holy Scriptures. It's a blue book. There must be 150 post-its in this book by now. Markings and post-its. I can't find anything anymore. There's so many post-its sticking out with arrows and this and Babylon and wolf and lamb and a babe is their master and an eye for an eye and kosher foods and last of the summer. So today I'm reading from Genesis and I'm looking at this passage because I touched on it yesterday. And I swear to you, I swear on my own life on this show today, this one sentence is somewhat and very obscurely marked with a yellow color, even though I never marked it. Never. I never marked it. I didn't mark it. There's a slight yellow. You know how you have, like, you're a kid who's studying, they have a marking pen where they underline a sentence or two, something important, right? And this sentence is there in a very mild yellow. It says, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. You know, this is so important for me to read to you today because of the homosexual propaganda, which is almost all-encompassing today. The gays do not stop. They are relentless. They are brainwashing an entire generation to believe that homosexuality is equal to heterosexuality, that it is almost more godly to abort a child and almost more godly to not have a wife if you are a man than it is to do the right thing. It's unbelievable to me how a kid today, his mind is poisoned in the schools. The mind is poisoned when he turns on a television set. The mind is poisoned when he clicks on AOL or Yahoo or any of the other servers. Everywhere you turn, there's more propaganda about homosexual marriage and how good it is and how it's an oppressed minority because they're not being given equal rights. It's all a lie. It's a gigantic fraud and a gigantic lie. Every religion on earth prohibits that behavior. There's not a culture, there's not a civilization that encourages this behavior. It's astounding to me. And the only way to counter it is with the truth of reality. Look at nature. Look at nature and look at the going forth and multiply. It is the reason for living. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. There is no other way to do it. Don't tell me about, I don't want to even go into the obscurity of the lesbians who are having children. It makes me puke. It makes me nauseous to think about the unnaturalness of people who are inseminating themselves in that manner and creating a child. It's almost an abomination to me. I'll be very frank with you. I find it nauseating. And, you know, this leads to a story that I did not want to tell you, but I'm going to tell it to you, about the so-called conservative Jewish movement is considering whether to ordain homosexual rabbis and to permit homosexuality, as it says. So I'm reading what these idiots are writing, and the guy who heads it up is from New York, of course, and it turns out that of his four children, one is a lesbian who inseminated a child within herself or her girlfriend artificially. So naturally now he's going to change all of conservative Judaism in order to feel good about his daughter. So now he's going to write a law that says, well, it's just like having brown eyes or blue eyes. And although we're going to accept homosexuality and gay rabbis, we're going to prohibit anal sex. I started to laugh hysterically. I said, this is amazing to me. In other words, it's okay to be gay but not too gay. Is that what he's saying? Is that what he's getting at, the rabbi? This is the great genius, the rabbi. It's okay to be gay, but don't be too gay. Be gay. Only as gay as we say. In 10 years, though, we'll permit that. Don't worry about it. We'll get real liberal in 10 years. You know, it's unbelievable to me. What is the point of a religion if they keep changing the goalposts every day, telling us that they're modernizing? Either you're religious or you're not religious. Either you believe in God or you don't believe in God. Either you have a fundamental belief in some of the rules or you don't believe in any of the rules. That's all there is to it. So that's my interpretation of what's going on here. We're living through amazing times. The problem is we wouldn't even be talking about this if these elements did not control the media, if these elements of liberalism, and that's what they are, make no mistake about it, they're all intimately tied up together. If these elements did not control the movies that are projected to the world, if these elements did not control what comes out in the newspapers, if these elements did not control the imagery on the news shows, we wouldn't be this weak, sick nation that is falling apart. Trust me on this. We wouldn't be falling apart. Catering to the radical Muslim who stages a game at the airport. Now they're eating it up. Anyone with a brain could see what these phony imams did, except for the rats. Paula Zahn with a scarf. She can't get enough of the Iman Act. The Imam Act for Paula Zahn. They're all victims. All innocent victims. Paula Zahn, CNN, innocent victims. She can't see that they staged it as a probe in order to break down our resistance to a terrorist attack. She didn't see that. We know they wouldn't conduct it. We know they're peaceful men. But we know they were seeing if they can get away with gaming the system and breaking down some of the Patriot Act and some of our security concerns. All part and parcel of the same mentality. Don't you see the connection? Don't you see how it's all interrelated? Don't you understand this? What I've been trying to tell you, the danger we are in is very clear. the way out of it is also very clear. We absolutely have to take control of the media. That's number one. When I say take control of the media, I mean don't watch that filth. Turn off those rats. Don't let them propagate their propaganda. Turn them off. Cancel your newspaper subscription. Do it today. Do it yesterday. You're doing it in droves. Their circulation is in the garbage because you've stopped buying the anti-family, anti-American rubbish that they publish. Good. Step one. Step two, turn off the televisions. Don't watch it. It's the devil's workshop. Off. Don't go to their movies. You don't need to go to Danny DeWino's movie, the stunt he pulled on the slob show to get publicity for his movie. Who would go to a movie from that guy? He wasn't funny as of 10 years ago. Who wants to see him cavorting? Nobody. Don't go to their movies. Don't watch their television shows. Don't read their newspapers. Turn them off. You have the power to do it. That's taking control of the media. And they're getting the message. Believe me, they're getting the message. It's a very slow process, and I don't know if we have the time to change this mentality, but that's the way to do it. Atlanta, Georgia, on WSB, Rick is a Satanist who wants to talk about the supernatural. Rick, welcome to the program.
I heard you mention something about Satanist earlier, and I didn't understand what you were trying to say, something about Satanists claiming they could give people power or something to that effect.
Well, if you are a Satanist, tell us why you engage in Satanistic activities.
Because I believe that the three main religions of the world, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, I believe they're false religions. I believe that they don't accept people for who they are and what the real desires are.
So the real desires are to hurt others?
No, not, I wouldn't say that. But I would say that definitely for self-defense purposes, that should come into play. And if someone has done something wrong to you, I believe that revenge is perfectly acceptable behavior.
So in other words, you as a Satanist engage in revenge.
If the person has hurt me with the intention, with no other reason but to hurt me, and they deserve punishment, then I would say yes. But that doesn't mean I directly go out and touch them. A Satanist relies on other means to do things like that.
No, I understand how you think. I'm just curious as to why you engage in Satanism.
Well, after looking over religions of the world, that's the one that appealed to me the most. To me, Satan is very honest. To me, the God of other religions are liars. That's the way I see it.
So you find it a positive thing to be a Satanist?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very practical, very realistic, and it's also very moralistic as well.
It's moralistic to be Satanistic.
I believe so, yes, because you actually look at life as it is and instead of trying to twist it into something that it's not.
But what is life? You say you look at life as it is. What is life to you?
I think life is a struggle. It's a struggle to survive. It's a struggle to maintain independence.
Right. We agree on that, but why do you assume that the religions of the world are false and your way is not false?
Because I believe that the main religions of the world want you to deny your basic impulses, such as sex, or indulging in some kind of pleasure. I think those are normal things that people should be allowed to.
So, in other words, you should indulge all of your impulses?
No, not all of them. I mean,
well, you just said that religion makes you deny your impulses, and therefore they're false. But don't you understand that that's the exact purpose of religion, is to constrain man's more base impulses?
That's the purpose of the main religion of the world, yes, I agree with that.
You think the world would be a better place if they engage in every one of their impulses? If people engage in all of their impulses, it would be a better world?
No, I didn't say that. What I mean is...
Well, you just said that religion is false because it teaches people to constrain their impulses. So therefore, you're arguing that we should then, let it all hang out? If it feels good, do it?
That's kind of simplifying things, but as long as, I'm not saying you can go out and infringe on other people's rights just because that makes you...
Wait a minute. What about a man who molests a child? He's just letting his impulses hang out. Is that acceptable to Satanists?
No, that's not acceptable. No, not
well, why? All. Why not? By your definition, religions that prohibit that are just out of touch. So therefore, you must be in favor of all impulses being enacted, or are there some that you're not?
No, I don't believe you should engage in an impulse that hurts another person.
An impulse that hurts another person, therefore, is forbidden. So then you're arguing that Satanism has some morality attached to it, so or some moral code.
I do. But
okay, and so what is the moral code? Has it been codified anywhere that I could see it? The Western religions, Judaism and Christianity, have the Ten Commandments. Do you have the Ten Commandments of Satanism?
Not really. It's basically, you know, live your life, be an individual, and don't try to change who you are just to please some other person's religion. That's basically what it is.
So if you have an impulse to murder people, that's obviously prohibited as well.
That's prohibited, yes.
But why?
Well, because morally, I don't feel that's correct.
Morally? So where do you get your moral values from? Where do they generate from?
I believe personally that deep down inside, people have their morals. It's already instinctually ingrained. I believe that deep down, people know.
Oh, I don't think that people have any morals instinctually ingrained at all. I don't think there's any evidence to that. I think you can teach a child to be anything you want that child to be to a great extent. To a very large percentile, you can take a child and turn that child into a suicide bomber. Take a look at the Palestinian territories. They're training their babies to kill. They have no morality. To them, morality is blowing somebody up. So I disagree entirely. I think the human being is an empty slate.
Well, it's true that a lot of things are imprinted on us as children. But I think deep down innately, even a child will know that it's doing something wrong if it was to, you know...
Yes, a normal child raised by normal parents who have some moral foundation with some moral teaching coming from somewhere will understand right from wrong. However, if you don't teach the child something, how can the child come to know what's right and what's wrong? There are children who are mean-spirited. They'll tear the wings off off flies. They'll kill birds. They'll climb into a bird's nest and break the eggs. They will go out of their way to hurt other children. I've seen them, and they have perfectly fine parents. I believe that there are children who are born who are absolutely monstrous, that they're born evil. And likewise, I believe there's a small percentage of people who are born absolutely good who will never do harm. But by and large, people, I think, are blank slates.
I understand what you're saying, but I still think...
Well, look, we don't have to, you know, hate each other or disagree. I don't think we do, really. It sounds to me like you don't go out of your way to hurt others. Maybe you're hiding it. I don't know.
No, I don't hurt other people, but I believe that, you know, when it's time to stand up and fight, you should stand up and fight it and not hide with some false morality and claim that some God is going to save you. You need to save yourself when it comes time to do
that. Well, that I understand, but I don't know that it's Satan that's going to save you. I think it's a survival instinct. What anyway, Rick, thank you for calling the show.
Yeah!
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Do you have a rock and roll song for me here on the program? I don't know. I can't take it anymore. I can't take it. I just can't take it. I can't do this anymore. I can't. I want to fight back, and I can't. We've been destroyed by George Bush and the fake Republicans. We've been destroyed. You got to hand it to them. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Richard in Las Vegas, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I need your help interpreting some of this funny language from UC Berkeley. You see, I've just finished my undergraduate study work in physics, and I'm applying to graduate school at UC Berkeley for physics. And they want me to write an essay about how I might serve educationally underrepresented segments of society with my degree.
Oh, what a bunch of garbage. So here you are, a brilliant science student. You're applying to graduate school and they're giving you the communist litmus test?
Oh, yeah.
What in the world does physics have to do with underserved communities? What do they want you to tell them how you would teach physics to a Native American or an inner city black? Is that the point? Is there a special physics that's reserved for homosexuals? Is there a special branch of physics that's reserved for various minorities? This is an example of the political insanity of the University of California at Berkeley under the dunce who was running it. It was a great school when I got my PhD. Unfortunately, today, with very rare exception, It is becoming like Queens College was in the years that I left it, when they created open admissions and turned it into a cesspool of stupidity. It has since recovered somewhat, but it never will be what it once was, when it was fair and based strictly upon brains, brains, and more brains.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Music, because first of all, I'd like to be there right now, truthfully, but I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to go in January, maybe. Great place. It's a great place. Great. I lived there for a number of years, you know. You know what it's like for a kid from New York to go, like, to wind up in Hawaii? I'd never been in a place like that. It was unbelievable. It was like walking into a heaven itself. So anyway, to make a long story short, we're talking about a Turn It Off now, a long time ago. You know, when you land in heaven, you think you can do anything, and you have hubris. Hubris is a sense of confidence that only children and the mad have and can understand. But when a grown-up has hubris, it becomes very dangerous, and in my case, that was true. So you get to the islands, and it's a magical time. You never saw sunsets like this. They can break your heart. When you see plumeria blossoms lying on the, you know, I used to bicycle up to the university. I would see plumeria blossoms lying on the sidewalk. I would stop the bicycle and pick up the plumeria blossoms and look at them and smell them. And I'd never seen anything like this. Sure, I had seen rose petals on the fence in the Bronx when I was a little kid. They were soft and beautiful. But this was something unique. The scent was unlike anything I had ever experienced. And so you see these sunsets and these sunrises and all of these things that you had never seen, and birds in the jungles in the back of the rainforest that you never saw or heard before. And you start to get tuned into your own body in a way you've never been tuned in. If you've never lived in the tropics and it's the first time, and you start shedding clothing and shoes and leather, and you put it all away, and now you're in flip-flops, and then you're in shorts, and all of a sudden at night the breeze comes through your sleeves, and you start to become alive in a new way, and you go in the warm water. So you start to feel like the original man. And you buy a sailboat. It's the first thing you do. And so I bought a sloop-rigged boat. She was not catch-rigged. I was mistaken. I remember now. Tarangi was a sloop-rigged sailing vessel about 22 feet long. And it was made of white oak primarily. And it had been built in Oregon and sailed out by somebody else to Hawaii. I bought it for nothing, you know, next to nothing. She was in perfect shape and no engine, as I said. So I buy this boat. I put it into the Alawai Yacht Harbor. And that's where I kept it. And, you know, most people who own boats mainly use them to drink on and hang out. And it's as good a thing to do as any. But I was foolish enough to actually want to sail the boat, even though I knew nothing about sailing. And I took it out without an engine. I knew it was pretty easy to get out because the wind was prevailing out of the yacht harbor. And I said, wow, this is great. And so I, you know, with a few friends, I was on a boat alone. They just cast me off, released the lines, pushed me backwards. And there we go, down the Alawai Channel, out into the channel, and out into the ocean. I was zipping along with the sail out, and I was zipping along out onto sea, and there I was. I said, this is super. I'm really enjoying myself. Then I realized I didn't know how to get back. I said, how do I turn this thing around if the wind is blowing out? Well, I didn't know how. And I said, well, I better figure this out, because if this keeps up for a while, I'll soon be out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there'll be no way back at all. I had no flares, no radio, no engine. All I had was confidence that was bordering on the insane. So the first thing I did was I resorted to common sense, and I dropped the sails, because that, of course, would cut the motion of the boat. I dropped the sails, and using the tiller, I turned the boat around, you know, flip-flop, flip-flop. until I got the boat pointing back towards the land. And then I figured if the wind is blowing against me, there must be a way to go into a prevailing wind and still move against it. I've seen other people do it. And little by little, and lo and behold, I was able to, luckily, I don't know whether it was current or God's hand itself pushed me back into the harbor, but I learned quickly that sailing is not for the amateur. That's all there was to it. So those days are over. But she was my first boat. I don't have a life ring from Tarangi because I didn't even have a life ring. I don't even think I had a life preserver. You know, those were the age. That was an age when people had total, like, madness about what they could do and accomplish in the late 60s. But now I drive a power boat, and it has all sorts of safety equipment on it. Sure, not enough that as I should have. But I like power boats a lot better because they're easier to get out. I can get this thing out of the way. It's 45 feet, twin diesels, 19 tons, unladen with fuel and water, and I can go out on it alone and come back on it alone in almost any wind. And that's the good part. You can get out in 12, 15 minutes, and there it is. It's just you and the birds and the water and the land, and that's it. And that's what I go out for now, is just to look at the water and look at the birds and look at the landforms, mainly, and the seals I like. And I can name every bird on the bay. More or less, I know every bird on the bay as a species. Not by name, not like, how you doing, howdy. I don't mean that. Species-wise, I've come to understand that every animal has a personality. Isn't this strange? It's not that the PETA folks are correct. I still eat animals. But they all have a personality when you get to know them. And they all want to live. Dad taught me that everything wants to live. That's how he taught me to respect human life. He said, you'll notice that a cat wants to live, a dog wants to live, a rat wants to live, a mouse wants to live, a bird wants to live. And he had learned that when he had accidentally shot a bird as a kid. Remember, this is odd to a country boy listening to the show. It sounds very weak. But remember, I'm a New York City boy. And to us, it's a different experience than it is to you guys. I respect your ability to hunt for your food. But every animal actually has a personality when you get to know that animal. They're all different. Just as we're all different, every human is unique and like a snowflake. Well, guess what? So are animals. They're all unique. It's amazing when you come to understand that. Monkeys rampage an Indian capital. Just after weeks after the Indians' capital's deputy mayor toppled to his death fighting off a pack of monkeys, the animals are back on the attack, sparking fresh concerns about the simian menace. One woman was seriously hurt, and 24 other people were given first aid after monkeys rampaged through a neighborhood in East Delhi over the weekend. So the monkeys are out of control. Rogue monkeys running into residences. I guess if I go on with the story, I'll be accused of simiophobia. And I'm liable to face a boycott from some monkeys around the globe, and I can't afford that, because if the monkeys were to boycott my products, there'd be no conservatives left to buy them, I suppose. That reminds me of the monkeys going crazy. You know, many people, everything they turn into cute. Everything's cute. A bear is cute. A monkey's cute. You know, this is such liberal stupidity. Monkeys are dangerous with big teeth. So it reminds me of Louis and the Monkey story, which I told once. At most in my tenure on radio. We go back now, ladies and gentlemen, put on your resting cap. We're going to go back in time. We're going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antiques mart. Little old Michael's cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the bum from the Bowery, who in those days, he was a drunk. He wasn't a bum. He worked. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes and whatever he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. But now you got to understand, this guy was a stoned alcoholic of the old school. Skinny like a rail. White guy, skinny like a rail, smoked like unfiltered cigarettes, but one of the nicest guys on earth. He wears the rubber apron. He's cleaning downstairs, does the bronzes. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor, and where else are you going to get it from his son, you know? So I'm doing the thing. So I got to know Louis over the years, and he taught me various things. Like once we had Louis over to the house. I'll never forget it. I was so proud that my father took this guy who I liked all the way out to Queens and invited him to dinner. I don't know what came over. Maybe it was Thanksgiving or whatever. And Louis had dinner with us at the table, and the guy was surprisingly erudite, and he knew things. And, like, after dinner, we did games, and Louis the drunk showed me how to bend nails. He showed me mind over matter. He took a nail, and he showed me that if you put your fingers, blah, 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 and put your mind on it and keep up the pressure, the nail would bend. I was shocked because I was a skinny kid with little hands, and I bent the nail. And he taught me mind over matter, but it was all molecular because you put the heat and the pressure, blah, 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 eventually that nail is going to bend. But I learned in life it's the same thing. It's all willpower, okay? Now there's another element to the story. So Louis is this kind of guy, interesting, but an alcoholic, and this and that. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was like a slum, zero, you know, oilcloth city, leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So he lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, out of the world, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. No. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. But Louis don't just get a spider monkey, one of the skinny little monkeys. Louis gets a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are already strong. They got a chest on them. They got strong hands. And Louis's in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever he goes, there's the monkey. And the monkey's on his shoulder and where he's cleaning and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar in the Lower East Side, I remember the name to this day, named Hamill and Corn, whatever money he made from my father, he'd take 2 minutes later, he'd be in the bar. And he'd throw money in a jukebox, and he would whistle and sing, and he'd buy everyone drinks till he was broke. He'd stumble out in the street. He would get hit by a car, sleep on a barrel. He didn't care. He lived for the booze, and that was it, but he had a heart of gold. So Louis gets the monkey, finally has someone to fill his empty nights. And as I say, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we get a call. Louis's in the hospital. He's dying. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment, attacked him, and almost ripped him to pieces. And he suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital, probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. And the monkey went at him. And you don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon. He ripped his neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his leg. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty bad. And eventually, he took the monkey. I think he grabbed it and threw it out of the window. It just shows you. If he hadn't have done it, he'd be dead today, okay? But a liberal today probably would have tried to talk to the monkey. Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey, and he decided it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult a liberal book on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line is here. But the point is that even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found the monkey. It was probably the right thing for him to do. But it goes back to the story I opened with, which is that the monkeys are rampaging in India. And the rogue monkeys are breaking into houses, including the daughters of the ruling Congress Party. They broke into the Indian Parliament. Trouble boiled over in late October when the city's deputy mayor fell to his death driving away monkeys from his home. He was on his balcony reading a paper when four monkeys appear, his family says. He waves a stick to scare them away, tumbles over the edge, and boom, he drops dead, falls off the balcony, and dies. So right now you could see that Louis was a pioneer in a way, in a sense that he understood that monkeys were dangerous long before they did in India when they turned into a sacred animal. And that's the Louis and the monkey story on the Savage Nation. You got to admit it wasn't bad. It's nicely entertaining. And that's it. That's the story. The bottom line is don't get a monkey as a pet. They're wild animals.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
You know, I thought about dogs last night. I got to tell you this. I'm not going to go in my dog is great, but my dog is great. This 10-pound poodle, Teddy. I was mad at him for 2 days. I gave him the cold shoulder. He was hurt by it because he peed all over the house from 24. I think it scared him with the atomic bomb and the screaming and the shooting and the yelling. What I had to clean up for 2 days around the house, little hidden areas there. But I forgave him. Now we're friends again. Now every morning I get up, it's the same thing. He sits on this pink chair. I have a recliner that I bought. I don't know how they let this store into Marin County. All the libs were like mad at it. Lazy Boy. When Lazy Boy opened him in Marin County, all the phony snobs, ooh, we can't have that in our county. That's not classy. I went and I bought a beautiful recliner that is so ugly, it's unbelievable. It's like ugly chair. Every house must have an ugly chair. That's the only chair you actually wind up sitting in. Beautiful chairs nobody will sit in. If they do, you have to worry that you're going to stain it, you know, with something. But the ugly chair you could sit in, you can eat in it, you can drink in it, coffee could spill on it, doesn't matter. This chair is so comfortable that Teddy took it over. It's his chair. So every morning, it's a pink recliner from Lazy Boy. He jumps on the chair, and he puts his back up against it, and he gives me his two paws out, I swear to God. And he does it. I taught him how to do high five. Give me five. And we play. Like I do the hands back and forth. Give me five, give me four, give me three. He loves this game. He could have been a circus dog. My dog could have been anything. I wonder how he is. He had a little growth underneath his private part that was worrying me a little bit. He went to the vet today. I don't even know how it came out. You know, maybe we should get the vet on the show, see how Teddy's private parts are, because I want to breed him this year. I don't want him to disappear. How? You know, once in a few hundred thousand years, a perfect animal comes along. How could his genes be lost? He's like Western civilization himself, my dog. We got to breed this dog. I got to have five or six puppies and keep two of them. I'm not going to sell them. You think I'm going to sell them and have a liberal buy them? Oh, yeah, I want. And they're going to send me pictures of them being mauled in a pit bull arena to torture me? No. I would never sell puppies. No, I couldn't do it, you know, because I don't know how they'll be used. I'll keep a couple of them. So I'm becoming like dog, more and more doggy. I mean, I love the dogs. I just love them so much. Because you can trust them. I thought about it last night, his eyes. Now that he like, you know, like he knows I like him again after the peeing thing where I gave him the cold shoulder. Dogs' eyes are very interesting. If you don't abuse your dog, you only get a couple of emotions out of him. None of them are hate. Did you realize what I just said to you? Most dogs don't know how to hate. Yeah, you could train a dog to hate. I'm not talking about that. In general, in a normal house, a dog has a set of emotions that you could see in their eyes. Admiration, love, happiness. Maybe it's sometimes a little hurt when you leave them and you're going to go out and be a human without them. They don't understand it because they think that they're you. Why can't you take me to that wedding tonight, Dad? What is wrong with you? I'm as good as you. I know, son, but not everybody sees the world the way you do. Not everybody wants short, furry creatures running around at weddings or in restaurants. You'll have to just stay home. So you get those, but you never get hate. Does dog ever look at you with hatred? No. Which is why we love them. You understand that? Well, you should have a dog. And by the way, don't trust people who don't have dogs. Oh, I just got the news. The tiny lump under his testicles turns out to be benign. There's nothing there. So, I mean, it was pretty worrisome because there's a little tiny lump there. And like any living creature, you know, or the way of all flesh, you worry. You know, maybe the little guy has cancer or something. But it turns out he's probably bitten by some bug and it scabbed over and it disappeared. But he sure enjoyed licking himself down there all the months that he thought of. He had a justification. Look, who can blame him, you know? I think the reason we're not dogs, or one of the reasons that they are dogs, is they can do that, however you look at it. I mean, normal men can't do that. That's why we're not dogs. If we were, see, if we were double jointed like that, we probably would be dogs. So God made it so you can't do that. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you have an animal, it's amazing to watch how they behave. Even a little thing like a bite in their private parts, what they do with. I'm just elated. I'm not felinophobic. Don't get me wrong. I'm not exactly a felinophile. But I prefer dogs because dogs to me are covert and cats dogs are overt and cats are covert. Cats remind me of people in Pacific Heights or in the San Francisco government. Everything they do is hidden and secretive. It's like Choirgate. They're trying to sweep it into the cat litter box, but I kind of doubt that that's where it's going to end up. You know, they're like cats in this city, like cats that are really dirty, that gussy themselves up with Da Vinci dresses. But behind it, you know that there's dirty underwear. That's what the whole city reminds me of. The miners came in 49 and 51, the whores. You ever hear that? Mark Twain wrote it. I'm sure many of you love it. I didn't write it. Mark Twain did before the Fairness Doctrine. That's not a dirty word. In 51, he said in 49, the miners came, in 51, the whores. And then he says, and then something evolved from it. It's called Pacific Heights. That's how they run San Francisco. But they put on dresses from back east, you know, we have one of the best Opry's west of the Hudson and the Mississippi River. We put on quite a symphony out here. Oh, it's so out of town that I love it. There's no bigger small town than San Francisco. I wouldn't mind if they were patriotic or Americana. But my God, how could they be so anti-American? It's hard to believe. Everything that's family-oriented, they despise. They spit on the flag, the Boy Scouts. But thank God Teddy's okay. That's all. I can't wait to see the little guy after the show. Go home, talk to him. Say, Teddy, I am so glad you went to the doctor and you don't have a tumor under your private parts. But stop licking them already. There's no excuse anymore. You can't say, Dad, it itches, or Dad, there's a problem. You're just being a dirtbag if you keep doing it, Ted. I can't do that because I'll give him a complex. I think you can give dogs a complex. They are very sensitive to criticism. Oh, my God. They're like liberals. Liberals are very good at pretending they don't care what you say to them, but boy, do they care. Whoa, they're thin-skinned.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Today's show is called Black Dog, Black Man. And here's how it works. Here's how it works, and it's a hard story to tell. It's a hard story to start, but once I get into the story, it's going to be very easy to tell. I don't have a way to begin this story other than to tell you I was on my bicycle before the show in one of my moods. I go in and out of moods and grousing about it. I just read that there was a Russian in New York who bought a $150 million apartment, so I started to get mad, grousing about that, saying I don't understand this world I'm living in. There are guys coming back from Iraq without legs and arms. And this guy has enough money to buy another $150 million apartment. Well, something's wrong with the picture here. So I said, look, I have a choice right now. I could sit here getting angry, or I get on my bicycle and take a 10-minute ride. Because I remember that many years ago, 20 years ago, I read a couple of self-help books. And one of them said that in the few minutes that you're sitting there grousing about how bad things are, you can send a letter, make a phone call, run around the block. And you know what? It helped me then, and it helps me now. So I got on the bike and I went down to a kind of isolated area where they're building some new houses by the water, because I love to watch houses under construction. It's very optimistic to see the wood and the contractors and the this and the that. And I'm out by the point, and I'm coming back, and I see this big black Great Dane off a leash. Now, I happen to be afraid of black dogs. I mean, big black dogs. In fact, big white dogs. In fact, big dogs generally frighten me because I was bitten when I was young, right down to the bone, and had to be hospitalized. So I have a real respect for dogs. So I said, now I got to be very careful as I go by this Great Dane. I don't know whose it is. If I let out anger inside of me, the dog's going to feel it. If I let out fear, the dog's going to fear it. So I said, just be cool and go. Don't go too fast. Don't go. So I go by. The dog doesn't bother me. I said, thank God for that. Then I come upon a guy who's got a truck, who's doing auto detailing. And he's a big black guy. I've seen him once in a while. Huge. I mean, like a football-sized guy. And he comes out of the truck and he says to me, you're looking good. And I said, what? He says, you lose some weight? And we start to talk. I didn't know the guy. I've seen him around. But he thought he knew me. He said he knew me. Not thought. He knew me for a number of years. He's been around this county doing cars. A great guy. I'm going to tell you the story now, where it goes. So one thing leads to another. And he says to me, you remind me of another radio guy I knew. He says, this guy was as smooth as can be. He could walk the ghetto, and he could walk the White House. So I said, you know, let me tell you something. I said, David, I grew up in New York City, and I had to learn how to swim with all kinds of fish. New York City was a very big fish tank. And if you didn't learn how to swim the right way, they'd tear your fins off. And he laughed. He says, well, they wouldn't just tear your fins off. He says, they'd eat you for breakfast. And we started to talk. Now, he grew up in a black ghetto here in Marin County. There is one, and it was called Marin City. It's an interesting story unto itself. The housing was built by the magnate, Kaiser. When they were building Liberty ships in World War II, they needed to bring in workers, and they didn't bring them in from Mexico. They brought workers in from the South, and they were largely black people, and they built housing for them. And you may not know it, but many of the ship workers, you know about Rosie the Riveter, of course, but you didn't know that most of the Liberty ships were built by black people, particularly out here in Sausalito at the Kaiser shipyards. So the housing was built nearby, and it's become basically, largely a black community. And naturally, the way things have evolved in our society, and blame whoever you want, it hasn't been a picnic for the people living in there. So we were walking around, and we were just standing there talking about the dog and the this and the that. So I said, well, how did you come through that place and come out the way you are? You see, he's a pastor. In addition to running a service that, you know, polishes cars, he happens to be a minister. His name is Pastor David Hall. And I'm going to tell you more about that in a few minutes and where this went and how that went there and how positive this man was. And we were laughing. He says, you know, I know people around here, very rich people. He says, their children can't play with anybody. I said, why? He says, well, I told him the reason your kid can't play with anyone is because you've given them everything. They got all these toys. They sit in the house and they play electronic toys. They don't know how to play with anybody. I said, isn't that a shame? And I told him that I'm a people person, that I'm not really alone, or I don't really like to be alone. But I figured if I got out on the bike, I said I'd run into somebody to talk to. And I said, sure enough, this was like hitting, you know, the triple lottery for me in terms of the kind of person I am. It's like all four cherries came up on that big, slot machine in the sky of humanity. And this goes back to what I told you a story years ago about me and Brother Billy down in Harlem when I was a kid. But that's a whole separate story. But this is going to lead somewhere else. So we're talking and this and that. We look up a hill where they're building the houses above where he's polishing the cars. And he says, when I was a kid, he said, you know what we used to do for fun? I said, what? He said, we'd slide down the hill on like linoleum. I said, I can't believe it. I said, we did the same thing. I said, I lived in a tenement on a block called Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. And above me was a hill called Bryan Avenue. Between us was a big empty woodlot that had a huge hill on it that was denuded of foliage. And we'd slide down it on oilcloth, you know, old linoleum. And I said, well, we'd also play war. He said, how'd that work? I said, well, we'd take the garbage can covers. We'd put them in our hands, and there'd be like a gang of us. I'm talking kids 5, 6, 7 years old. No one had guns or knives. And the game was to run up the hill against the other street as they were raining ash down upon us. And like Gladiator, bounce, bounce, bing, bing. And I said, my head would get split open 100 times in these things. I always had a knack. I don't know where the ash guys, you know what the ash is from? He says, no. I said, well, in those days, I said, they had garbage that they would burn in incinerators. And the leftover of that burn was like a volcanic ash. You know, thank God they don't do it anymore. And I said, these kids would get the ash out of the incinerator and rain it down upon us. And you'd have to fend it off. You can go home, you can get killed. So I said, many a time I'd come home with my head bleeding, with blood running down my head. I'd come home, my mother would faint before I got through the door. She was like a panic case. She'd go, oh, my God, and she'd fall on the floor basically screaming and yelling, I'm bleeding, and she's doing nothing. But I said, next door, I had an aunt who was like stoic, like Russian aunt. Nothing fazed this woman. She'd look at me with the sober face, get out the peroxide and bandage it up, and that was it. So he lit up. David did, and he says, when are you going to write that book? I was like, bung. I said, what? He said, when are you going to write that book? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, all those stories of your youth, he says, those are great stories. Well, we talked about so many different things. And it turns out that Pastor David Hall of the Big God Ministries is running a turkey drive for Thanksgiving, and he's trying to, you know, do the right thing. And I'm going to send a little money over there. But the point is, he said, would you like to be with me on the 19th and the 20th as we give out turkeys to the poor? I says, yes. He says, no one will know anything about you. You'll just be another guy handing out turkeys. Yeah, I'm going to hand out turkeys. How do you like that? And send some money for turkeys. So he went back to when he was poor, and he said, I got to tell you, I grew up on welfare. He says, my father left us when I was 5. He says, I'm one of 6 children. And he says, yeah, I ate the government cheese. He says with a big smile. He says, yeah, I grew up on the government cheese. And he says, I'd say to my mother, he says, Mom, if there's a God, why am I hungry? Now I said, oh, God, what a question. I said, kids are so smart. I said, they're brilliant. And he said, my mother told me never be bitter, never be angry, always have faith. Now, this is the most important part of the story, is the faith that this man had. He didn't turn to bitterness. He didn't turn to anger. He didn't hate Whitey. He didn't hate America. He just did what he did, and he did it, and he did it, and he did it. And you know what? He's the richest man I've met in recent years. He is the wealthiest man I have ever met in the last 10 years. And I've met people with a lot of money. And I said, you know, you remind me of the story that Tolstoy wrote, The Kingdom of God is Within. I said, because you do emanate the goodness. He said, well, Michael, if you don't give anything back, you're going to be empty inside. And this man lives to give, because he said in giving he gets love. Now, if this is not the epitome of what the Christian religion today is all about, I'd like to know what is. And so I guess the moral of the story is that the humanity in the other man can never be known until you have a contact with the other man. And, oh, I remember what a particular story, before I go to the next spot, got to him. I said, let me tell you a story. My dad owned a little store, and he had started on the streets of New York with a push cart. He came from the gutter. He was an immigrant with nothing, and he never really became a wealthy man. I said, but he had a little stall inside a store, and he sold first the used things, then he sold some antique things, and he always made a living. We had a house and always food on the table. And I said, well, one day, I said, it was all white people in there. I said, never did you see anyone but white people in that market. Now, remember who I'm talking to now. I'm talking to a stranger who happens to be a black man, who happens to be, like, you talk about fullback football team, huge man. And we're just looking at each other and talking. So I said, it's an all-white store. In comes a black man, well-dressed. And I said, he says to my dad, how much is that? My father says, oh, a certain amount of money. How much is that? He's pointing at different statues. All right, how much is that? How much? He says, I'll take them all. So now the man leaves, writes him a check, and my father pulls me over, and he says, I want to tell you something, Michael. He says, listen to what just happened in this store, because it's a lesson you're going to learn for the rest of your life. I said, what's that? He says, never judge a man by the color of his skin. He said, you never know who the man is, you never know what the man is, and you never know what that man's all about until you have an interaction with him. So when I told it to a pastor, Pastor Hall, he says, that is a beautiful story. He says, you've got to tell that story. And so I've just told that story, and I'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
We're living in extraordinary times. The last thing we need is a sourpuss feminist left over from the 60s bringing back the panoply of maniacs like Janet Reno, Madeleine Halfbright, who bombed Serbia for no reason whatsoever, and the other killers and murderers who are under the guise of putting themselves off as some great heroes. Reincarnated before God, they pay for their crimes. In this world, they get away with murder. But I've lived through some historic times in my life. You won't believe this. And here they are. Look what I have seen in my lifetime. I want to show you how long I've been around this planet so you're going to get a feeling of what I've seen in my lifetime. One, Superman defeated by every man in World War II. Two, the first atomic bomb used in warfare. The establishment of the State of Israel. The popularization of television. This is all in my lifetime. The popularization of air conditioning, the popularization of air travel, the popularization of the personal computer, the invention of the internet, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen the first man walk on the moon. I've seen the mainstreaming of homosexuality. I've seen the complete integration of blacks and whites. I've seen the development of mass welfare for unproductive citizens. I've seen the destruction of America's judicial system by corrupt lawyers. I've seen the meltdown of America's borders. I've seen the self-genocide of America's European-American majority through a mass abortion and mass tolerance of diverse sexualities. I've seen the acceptance of narcotics. I've seen the debasement of religion. I've seen the takeover of corporations by gamblers and con men. I've seen the elimination of grades in many schools. I've seen the introduction of racial quota systems. I've seen the impeachment of a president. What will I see in the future? Well, that's for you to decide, not me. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. There are many interesting articles up on my website today, which I hope to get to in the next hour. Now, if you think I'm being unfair by talking about the rotten fruit of the rotten guava on the jungle floor of the Hillary Clinton campaign, and make no mistake about it, she's put them in the back right now. She's buried Ann Lewis. Don't come out. Not now. Janet Reno, shut your mouth. Half-Bright appeared. They got her right off the stage. How that hag got up there, no one knows. Almost destroyed her in New Hampshire, the hag. Hated. 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 Throughout America. Hated. Albright. Hated. A maniac. The minute she wins, if God forbid she wins, all these hags come out from behind the curtain. But wait, hold on. I want to show you how fair I am. Who do you think is coming out to support John McCain? A group of menopausal men are men who pause because their pores lack claws, I wrote. Menopausal men are men who pause because their pores lack claws. Lawrence Eagleburger, George Shultz, Marlon Fitzwater. I swear, I mean, they're not bad people, but we don't need 80-year-olds coming out to support McCain. These are stalwarts from another political era. They all worked for Reagan. God bless them. They're Reagan alumni. Lawrence Eagleburger, George Shultz, Marlon Fitzwater. Real household names. Alexander M. Haig Jr. I actually love his work. I think he's a great guy. Margaret Tutwiller, General P.X. Kelly, Dan Coats. These are stalwarts from another political era. They're 93 self-proclaimed Reagan alumni. Now insist that Senator John McCain will win. Now, McCain, as you well know, is a Wall Street favorite because he's for open borders. No matter what he says, he's for open borders. He got booed, by the way, recently booed. Once you get the media out of the way and you let the people near him, you'll feel what's going on. You'll really know what's going on. The following former members of the Reagan administration have endorsed McCain. I don't even know who these guys are, so if I read the names, it mean nothing to you. Ralph Benko? Hello? Who is he? I don't know who these people are. I guess they're self-important, important Republicans from another time. I don't recognize any of their names. I don't know who they are. I could read these names. I don't know any of them. Not one name rings a bell. Lawrence Eagleburger, I know. Marlon Fitzwater, I think, invented seltzer. Alexander Haig Jr., I had him on the show about a year ago. He's a great guy. I don't know what he's currently doing, but he's a great man. Retired General P.X. Kelly, I think he invented the soccer ball. Ann Karalogos. Oh, that's a real great. I don't know who. Carolyn Kuhn. Who are these? I don't know who these people are. I'm sorry. Robert C. McFarlane. Didn't he invent the Ford Fairlane?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. Listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I drive into the city, go to this Chinese restaurant. Now, for one, the parking is enough to give you indigestion if you get there, and it's terrible, just awful. That already gives you indigestion. There's no point in going. So I get there. I've eaten there for 20 years, and they still mistreat us. It's just that I don't know if it's the nature of the business. They don't like me. It's racism. I don't know what it is. I can't tell. I get in there. I order a number of dishes, and I'm meeting a friend. And they bring us immediately the pot stickers and the steamed dim sum within 5 minutes. I said, well, tonight's going to be different. Now I'm three beers into the meal, and there are no dishes. And everyone who came in after me is eating. Eight times I get up, where's the food? Then they bring it out, and the rice is at the end. It was a mess, okay, a nightmare. I'm never going there again. But wait, the best is yet to come. My friend John, who's a philosophy professor, shows up a few minutes late, and he comes and he says, I had to park in a driveway around the corner. I hope I don't get a ticket. So right away, that's double anxiety. I don't blame him. There's no parking. Then he runs out 5 minutes later and he puts a note in his windshield which says, please don't tell me, call my cell phone number if you want me to move. Sure enough, in the middle of the meal, ring, ring. Oh, I'll be right out. I'll be right out. So I go out with him because John is a philosophy professor and he's not street smart. I just had an instinct I better be with him. Sure enough, there's a crazed Russian in the street. He had parked not only in the guy's driveway, but right against the guy's bumper, and the Russian is insanely mad, screaming and yelling, you have no brains! No brains! No brains! No brains! Stupid, stupid, stupid brain! No brains! What, you have no brains? Why are you parking my car? And he's crazy. He's livid. Now, I know how to defuse street situations, and John, the philosophy professor, doesn't know anything about this kind of interchange. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I'm trying to calm things down. I had 4 beers already. So I said to him, look, tell you what, just calm down. You have no brains! No, and he's screaming and yelling the Russian, no brains, stupid! And he's in everyone's face. So I said, this could escalate, turn very bad. You know, guns, knives, you don't know what's going to... Crazy relatives from the Ukraine could come out with tattoos from jail. You don't know where this is going to go. I'm trying to defuse it. So I'm saying to my friend, look, back the car up. I said, if there's any damage, I will pay you. I figured money talks, right? I wasn't saying it was anyone's fault. No brains. I don't care. Damage. No brains. No brains. And he's on and on with the no brains. I said, look, my friend is a philosophy professor. I don't care. No brains. Why on my car? So I said, John, back the car up. John backs the car up, and there's no damage whatsoever. So the Russian gets down on his knees, and he says, no brains, stupid! No brains anyway! I don't care, damage, no damage, stupid, no brains! So I said, look, is there damage? If there's damage, I'll pay. No brains, stupid! Stupid man! I said, look, is there damage? And I'm saying, John, get in the car and get out of here. I'm going to take care of it. Go! And John doesn't go. John sits there and starts in with the guy, I want to see you smile. I said, oh, my God. Now, the worst nightmare, you're telling an enraged Russian to smile? What does he think? This is a textbook in Marin County? He wants to see a smile out of an enraged Russian? He parked on his bumper? You know what that's like? That's like pulling out your private part and pressing it against his wife's jeans in the street. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? All right, look. I understand people expose themselves when drunk in Russia, but you don't touch wife's pants. With private part, you get killed for this. It was the equivalent of, what are you parking against the guy's bumper for? It's bad enough to be in the driveway, but if you're going to park there, you don't put it on the guy's bumper. It was like a new car and little, and it looks like the guy worked all his life for his first new car. And to him, this was like a sexual encounter. It's like, all right, in my country, I know they get drunk and they pull it out, but they don't touch wife's pants. It was like on that level of insanity, the guy parked against his car. So I said, get out of here. And he's out of the car telling the guy, I want to see you smile. I figure a relative is going to come out and say, what you say to my uncle? Smile? In Russia, the worst insult, tell him to smile when he's angry. I mean, to me, it looked like it was going to blow up into World War III. So I said to him, get in the car and get out of here. No, not here. So again, telling the guy that he didn't mean it and he wants him to smile. So I said to him, and the guy's screaming, I don't understand America. American people, stupid. Stupid American people. So I said to him, I looked him in the eye and I said, but you like America, don't you? See, I knew how to turn the situation because I know in Russia, a little bit about the Russian mind, which is that you can hate the person, but if you're a guest in another person's country, you don't hate the country because in his country, you get killed for hating someone else's country or your own country. I mean, he knows from his own reversal that through history, if you say you hated Poland and there's a Polish man in the street drunk, he'll kill you. You see, I hate you, but I like Poland. It's a strange kind of Slavic sense of humor that you have to understand how to defuse these things. He's stupid, friend, no brain. I hate Americans, stupid, don't understand them, but I love America. So it was like that kind of thing. Finally, it ended. So naturally, I'm never going to go back to that restaurant. That's all. You have to have been there. What I should have done is tape recorded this one. This would have been a beauty to have on tape recording. 1-800-449-8255. Debbie, KNEW, San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. How do you do? Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Savage, I do suffer from psychological and psychiatric illness, and I denied it for many, many years, having heard stories of my grandmother in New York, who at a mummer's parade had just been released from a psychiatric hospital and was a little too happy, so was returned by Black Wagon to suffer another round of electroshock therapy. So growing up, when I myself found myself to suffer from similar symptomologies, refused to go get help. And I'll tell you, I do believe that humans, and I find it interesting that rather than recognizing that we do produce very...
All right, so but what is your main point? Of course there's mental illness. There's always been, marginally crazy people and overtly crazy people. We know that. So what is it that we're disagreeing on?
Well, I think it's not subjective, sir. I think that there is a scientific way of producing diagnoses by way of examining common symptomologies and behavior. And
it's not that precise. That's the point, and that's where the rub lies. The doctors would have you believe that it's easy to diagnose and definitively diagnose that mental illness, and I disagree entirely. It's not that easy. Now, I've seen brain scan studies. Don't get me wrong. I've seen the different colorations in schizophrenics and others, but we have no fundamental argument here. In other words, I know there are people who are unstable. I know there are people who are totally crazy, and I know people who are rock steady and never suffer any such orientation. So where the argument arises is, can we control some of these proclivities through means other than medication is the only argument that I think we're having.
Well, I definitely think it can be controlled through medication. The disappointment...
No, you didn't hear me. You see, you went right over what I said. I said, can some of these symptoms or conditions be controlled with means other than medication?
I think it depends to what extent an individual is suffering. In my case, the answer is no. I spent many, many years seeking out. I went to Marin County. I saw the best nutritional therapist. And I wish I could say their names on air.
Did you try mega doses? I'm going to pick one thing out of the air. Did you try massive doses of niacin?
Sir, I tried niacin until my skin was so red. I look like...
I'm only asking because I want to know how far you went along with nutritional therapies. Of course, they're not going to work in all cases. But you did try Dr. Hoffer's niacin therapy.
I had more niacin in my blood. I went to Oregon. I went to L.A. I had neurosurgery for a very bizarre...
And they looked at your iron levels. They looked at your folic acid levels, correct?
Everything. I had more blood panels drawn from me.
You went that route. The route didn't help you, and now you're on major antipsychiatric drugs, and you feel better, correct?
I absolutely feel better, and I've been on
Fine. Well, no one's arguing with that. But I'm saying don't put children on Ritalin the minute they show signs of being a boy.
I absolutely agree with that as well.
All right, so there's no argument. You'll get me crazy if I keep talking to you another three minutes. Three more minutes, I'll need to reach for a pill. 1-800-449-8255. You can get me. You can go crazy from it. I once went and visited a holy man, a religious teacher. He was a former pugilist, a boxer, who then went into religion and became a religious guy. But he still maintained the man of the street. He knew reality. In other words, he didn't come from like an effete background. I was suffering at the time through various things that were going on in my life, mainly societal social engineering that made me feel like a failure because I was not granted what I had earned because they wanted to put people with less qualifications and of other races and of other sexual orientations. Total morons, by the way, given jobs, which is why the university has fundamentally collapsed in America in many departments, certainly not in all. And I was feeling it. I had two young children. I didn't know what was wrong. I killed myself. I did great work. I published my dissertation at Harvard, at a Harvard University Journal. I mean, it was pretty good stuff that I did. And they hired whack job moron feminist tree huggers or people from countries of origin other than the United States of America to make them feel good and to look good on the brochures. So I go to see this holy man, and he says to me, what is exactly your problem? And I explain it to him. And he says to me, we have a saying which says that if you take a stick and you put it into a dog, he used the word, I can't say it, let's say dog waste, I'll put it that way on the show. And he says, no matter which way you turn the stick, it's still dog waste. And he said, now, if you don't mind, I have to excuse myself right now. I got very mad at him. I was fuming because I wanted some mystical experience in this holy man's office. He told me, if you take a stick and you put it in, you know what, and no matter how you move the stick around, it's still you know what. What he was telling me is stop moving the stick around and you know what. And he was right. See, so there are many ways to cure problems. They're not all medicatable. Not everything needs medication. Sometimes common sense works. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that there's an epidemic of loss of common sense, an epidemic of loss of common sense. We have a nation of ninnies. Everyone walks around, medication.
I want my medication. I want my crutch. I want my drug. I want my medication. I want Uncle Sam to pay for my medication. I'm sickly. I want my drug.
Well, maybe you need your drug or maybe you don't. Maybe you're just a weak individual who refuses to take control of your own life. You know, you have diabetes and you're still eating Krispy Kreme. I wouldn't give you medication. I'd make you pay for your medication if you refuse to modify your diet. And you want me to pay for your diabetic treatment, for your treatment for diabetes, and so forth and so on. If you're not willing to help yourself, why should I help you? That's why our taxes are out of control in this country. But more than that, psychiatry is often used as mind control, societal control in our country. And I want to make a very big political point now, because we're moving very, very close to the ex-Soviet Union, where psychiatrists were used to diagnose people who were antisocial or anti-political. They were then taken away by the secret police, medicated into submission, and thrown into re-education camps. If you think we're not moving in that direction, my friend, you are mistaken. Some well-meaning psychiatrists are this far away from recommending that political dissidents in this country not be medicated. Trust me on this. I'm sure it's being discussed. That anyone who suffers this phobia or that phobia can only be treated with major pharmaceuticals. And I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it's going to come from the homosexual radical community, that Christians who believe in the Word of God are psychiatrically impaired by definition, and they should be medicated, and they should be re-educated. That is the only way to cure them of their God madness. I can guarantee you, it's being whispered in psychiatric halls. So don't tell me I don't see what's coming in this country unless you stand up to this juggernaut of the medico-legal profession, or I shall say the medico-pharmaceutical legal profession, because they're all intimately involved. Now, that's not to throw away all of medicine. That would be foolish, and I've never said that. That would be a ridiculous thing to say. I'm talking about integrative medicine, where all of these modalities are work together. You don't jump to one or the other. That would be like saying, oh, let's never use drugs and let's only use dietetics. That's absurd in most cases. So don't think that I'm a zealot in one area. But I don't want to be led around by the nose and to believe that there are no effects upon mind and body other than those that can be cured by drugs. The drug establishment is out of control in its power over the mind of the people. Take a look at the Viagra ads. I turned on Fox, CNN, MSNBC. I flipped around at 15 minutes after the hour all day. All I saw was a white-haired man dancing a woman around on a floor with a big smile as they left to the hotel room and said, Viagra, Viagra, Viagra. Every channel at 15 after the hour. Every man needs Viagra over the age of 40, according to the advertisements. Could it be that the man is impotent? Excuse me, erectile dysfunctional because he really doesn't want to have sex because he's not in heat? We are the only animal on earth who is deluded by our societal images and pressures into thinking that we should be, wow, I'm raring to go 365 days a year. I can spring up like a 15-year-old. I'm a potent man. There's no animal on earth that is potent 365 days a year. We're the only animal who's been deluded into thinking we should be. So now we medicate the fact that we're not attracted to the woman. We're out of sync with the desire. Or we shouldn't be having sex at all right now. Why must a man have sex 365 days a year? Where have you read an animal that has sex 365 days a year? It's unheard of. So in a sense, we are a totally insane society being led around by our nose. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Now, let's say you're subject to depression. Anyone with a brain is, incidentally. Anyone who can think and feel is subject to depression. Hey, hello, secret. Secret to everyone out there. Anybody who can think and feel and actually knows what's going on in America and the world gets depressed from time to time. But anybody, so geez, why am I depressed? Just look around. Take a look at Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and you'll know why you're depressed. Take a look at George Bush. Take a look at what's going on around the world, and you have a good reason to understand why you're agitated and depressed. But the fact of the matter is, it's been part of the human condition from the beginning of time. People have always gotten depressed, but they found ways around it other than going to some whack job who put them on an antidepressant, you know, so they could wind up, you know, going on a rampage in a mall 3 years later after bottling up all of their emotions when the Prozac wore off or whatever. You mark my words. You want to mark this one down? Mark this one down. In your lifetime, Prozac-like compounds will be banned because of the violent reactions that too often occur in users of these compounds. You mark my words. The day will come that the medico-pharmaceutical landscape will change, where they'll no longer have a grip over our government to the extent that they do, and people will finally understand that virtually every school shooting was conducted by a kid who was put on these drugs, either Ritalin first and then this stuff later on in life, to deal with the anxiety that had been induced by the Ritalin, and that eventually their violence was a direct side effect of these drugs. You mark my words, this drug will be seen, this class of drugs will eventually be outlawed because of the subpopulation in which it induces violence. And it's quite a large subpopulation, or suicide, by the way. There's a whole spate of suicides and homicides being committed by Prozac takers. Say, oh, he's crazy. I'm crazy. You wait and see how crazy I am. I guarantee you this drug will become, it'll become one of the, it'll be like, what's that drug? It'll be the thalidomide of the mind. This class of drugs will be determined to be the thalidomide of the mind. Another new phrase for you for 2008. This class of drugs will be seen as producing freakish results in people. So what I was getting at is there are natural ways to deal with these, with anxiety, for example. A lot of people suffer anxiety. Anxiety is part of the human condition as well. It's not an abnormal phenomenon. It's not unique to you if you feel you're anxious. You don't need to reach for a pill. Why do you think so many people are running in the morning and are running around reservoirs and exhausting themselves? They also feel these things. They also have frustrations and fears and anxieties and feelings of dread or running of the mind. You know, the Darwin himself suffered from a condition that today is being treated as a medical condition. It never was a medical condition. I think he called it running headedness, where his thoughts, he couldn't control his thoughts, and they ran on and on and on. I have it all the time. That's where creativity is a fountain. It's like a bubbling fountain. You don't bottle it up with a whack job putting you on a drug nation. And the reason I'm so upset over the drug nation that I live in is because of the drug nation. We have Bush as a president. We have global warming as an idea that would even be accepted for a nanosecond from a shyster like Gore. And we have a slate of candidates, all of whom make you want to puke.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.